Ron Goldschlager has been exploring the idea of happiness and questioning what living and life are all about, searching for meaning and value. Ron joins me today to talk about his new book, The Mystery of You. Could we first of all talk about what actually led you to write the book?
Thanks, Isabel. That's a very good question because I'm not a writer. Now it's 12 years ago, but it took 10 years. At the beginning, I had this urge to write about what I found as apparent contradictions between religion and science, if you like. And I can give an example. And I started writing on that. It was almost like a self-finding expedition, if you like.
Yes.
And today that's chapter 7 in the book, but that was the first thing that I wrote.
Right. How do you see today's communities, Ron? Like, we've got the individuals that make up those communities. And how do you see those groups coping with the world today?
And this is one of the things, Isabel, which really, really concerns me today, just as a human being and as an Australian. And I'm most concerned when I see society, especially Western society, it's virtually self-destructing. And that's also then spurred me on with what I was trying to do, because I see materialism is important, but it's not materialism for the sake of materialism. And rights are important, but it's not rights at the exclusion of everyone else. We need to have a balance between personal rights and the group. We need to care about society. We need to care about nature. There's more to life than just materialism. There's spirituality, etc. We're almost being made. In fact, if you look at the workplace, you know, I run a group of companies. I'm a business person now, and I don't do sexual harassment. But there are times, it can be a male member of staff, by the way, it doesn't have to be a woman member of staff, where, you know, a hug or a kiss or a pat on the shoulder is everything. I mean, we're human beings, we're touchy-feely. That's what a person needs.
Yes.
So we're producing robots, and you see it. You see it in the hospitals. You see it in the schools. Teachers not even allowed to give a child, you know, I mean, in the schools where my grandchildren go, they sometimes get a kiss or a hug. But generally, you know, you could be dismissed for such a thing. True?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So we're over-regulated by bureaucracy. It's a bureaucracy gone wild, and it's impacting on society that we're being made non-humans. But we're not like that. We're humans.
I mentioned to you when you first rang me this morning, when I first opened the book, I felt a little bit like Alice looking into the looking glass. I was looking into a world that I actually didn't know a lot about, and that is the Jewish perspective, which is very strong in this book, and it's obviously a big part of your heritage. And so I'm fascinated by different views of spirituality. That journey that we go on, the journey of life, do you think that the obsession that we have with youth is reflecting in our inability to really understand our journey? People are afraid to walk through life?
I think today when we look at the world, I think most people are so busy just getting through day by day and very much the here and the now, you know, instant gratification. They're not sort of, most people I don't think are thinking too much about tomorrow and the day after tomorrow. And of course, we have to enjoy today, but we also have everything we do today has got consequences for tomorrow.
It does, doesn't it?
Yes.
And I don't think people really think about that enough, do they?
No, I don't think so. I think most people are much more concerned about themselves and what's good for them now, like I mentioned before, and unfortunately too material. And they don't get the joys. It's like someone who's very thirsty or very hungry and they keep trying to drink or to eat to satiate this desire, But you don't fulfil that. They're actually looking for other things, but they probably don't even know what they're looking for.
How do we find those things?
I think it's about questions, Isabel. If people start asking questions and into themselves to start with, questions, and look for the answers, and they'll find not only the journey, they get on a journey, not only is that journey very exciting and it's very personal, and it's bits of it you share, of course, with other people, but the more questions you have, and the more answers you seek, the more questions you'll have. And you never finish having questions.
I was really interested in how you described how a bureaucracy comes about. So we start with an individual, we move into a group, then a community, we have institutions, organisations, and then at the end we have the bureaucracy that forms.
Yes.
And how do we find a balance in all of that?
I can tell you what I think in two ways, if I may. I mean, on a personal basis, and I use the analogy if a person, let's say from a religious point of view, if a person goes into a church or into a synagogue or something where there's a group activity, you very often will hear, oh, they didn't like this or they didn't like that. And so therefore they get turned off by the whole concept of something religious or spiritual. Let's call it a value system rather than a religion.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas, you know, everyone goes into restaurants and they'll have a bad meal somewhere or have a bad service, but it doesn't stop people from going to restaurants. You see what I mean?
Yes.
Well, on a broader context, because I'm a business person, I run a whole group of companies, today I think everyone in Australia, in fact in most of the Western world, are frustrated with bureaucracy because they find that the initial purpose, it's almost very theoretical. The initial purpose of bureaucracy was to set up, we used to call it the public service. That's not fashionable today.
Oh, it is in Canberra.
Maybe, yes, but the word. But the idea of a public service has disappeared. Mm. And there are good people there, by the way. There are, of course, are very good people who try hard. But overwhelmingly, what's happening, it's a subculture. There are a lot of people today who are only focused on the process, and they somehow got caught up in the process, which goes around in circles, and they're not at all tuned in with outcomes. So the frustration we have in society today is we see too much bureaucracy, too much intervention with daily life, but not enough outcomes. Mm. You see where I'm going?
Yes, yes.
And how do you solve it? Well, I think if people thought about what they were doing, and also if we had values, we have to have values. There are basic rights and wrongs. And again, it's not fashionable today. You know, in schools they don't teach, God forbid, don't teach about religion. That's very bad. I'm not saying to teach religion, but we have to have values. Mm. There are fundamental values of right and wrong, such as if you're walking on the street and you see a poor person, you go and help them. Not you're walking on the street and you kick someone's head in or there's a lot of violence.
Mm.
You know, there's public property, it's on a public transport or buildings. You don't damage and deface these things. You have to respect the society you're in.
Mm.
So those things concern me a lot.
Yes, and you're right, they don't have anything to do with religion, they're just basic human values, aren't they?
Correct, but if you ask anybody of my age group, people at work, you know, they grew up, they might have gone to the Catholic school system, the state school system, it doesn't matter, but they were taught, they lined up, you know, they might have saluted the flag. This all sounds very, very unfashionable, very old-fashioned, I don't know, very coy, and they were told, you know, keep to the Ten Commandments and you'll be good. But what I'm saying, there were rights and wrongs, and there was some discipline in some respect. And we've lost this now because of this extreme of only focusing on the self and our individual rights at the exclusion of everything else.
Right. Well, I'm speaking with Ron Goldschlager today about his book, The Mystery of You. Ron, there was something rather special, rather personal that you spoke about in your book, about the time that you walked through the Jaffa Gates into the old city of Jerusalem. Can you share a little bit about how important that trip is for you?
In a way, I mean, I was born Jewish, which is a religion. I'm Australian. I was born in Australia. My parents were new settlers here, if you like. They left Nazi Europe because they were persecuted there, and they came to try and give a better life. And so I was born Jewish. I didn't know that much about it, and I learned more about it with time. And I think this is a very misunderstood thing as well, too, today in terms of Israel, which is an independent country. But, I mean, from a spiritual point of view, most of the foundation of what happened historically happened there, in Jerusalem, in the old city. So it has a very special feeling. And for me, when I go there, it's like a kind of a historical connection, if you like, to the Jewish people of all ages. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes,
so
it does.
It's quite a spiritually uplifting. But that doesn't mean I don't feel spiritual elsewhere. I can feel spiritual in Timbuktu. Mm. But it has a very special feeling about it, yes. I mean, I feel... You know, everyone's looking back to their roots. You know, we look at Aboriginal Australia, and people look at where, if they are from immigrants. I mean, the so-called white Australian, if I can put it that way, is only seven generations old. You're talking about the first fleet. You know, we're a young country.
Yes.
So we're a multicultural country with a real richness of multiculturalism and heritage. So I think a lot of people, when they search back to find their roots, who are they, where do they come from, you know, they get different answers, but... What do I think? I think it's very important for people to know where they came from, to be proud of it. It's not perfect. Life isn't perfect. Know where they are today and try and know. You can't predict the future, but have a direction in their lives of who they want to be, to find themselves.
Now, you also found yourself, you talked about your journey to East Timor. Could you just tell me a little bit about that, how that came about?
Yeah, that was very interesting. It was in late 1999. I mean, it's a long story. At late 1999, I became aware of the East Timorese, and I made a connection here in Melbourne, in Australia, where there were a group of East Timorese who were trying to raise awareness, and these were also freedom fighters, if you like. And I think in many ways I saw a parallel of what the Nazi persecution did, the Holocaust did to the Jewish people, particularly in Europe, to what had happened to this genocide in East Timor. And I wanted to help them, so I became much closer to them. I used to meet with them a lot and talk with them. And then I got invited by Xanana Gusmão to come to East Timor, and I spent about 10 days there in February of 2000. It had a very large impact because what I saw was a very sweet people, but then most people in the world are sweet. You know, East Timorese, simple people of tribal kind of people with good values, I have to tell you, very good values. And it's also really a Catholic country. So you've got this synthesis between a European and monotheistic religion and between a tribal way, which is very beautiful. And I have to say, a lot of similarities in structure, family structure, to Jewish families, a lot. Mm. And, I mean, the people had suffered a lot. There was a lot of hurt, a lot of embarrassment. Sometimes when I was in some of the houses talking, they did tell some stories. I mean, similar kind of things. It's a heartbreak, but a very positive people. And what they wanted to do, and that's what really inspired me, was they wanted to build a new nation, not based on hatred, not based on vengeance or any negatives. They wanted a new society based on no exploitation and no corruption, but to rebuild. And I went to help them with that.
Right. Well, of course, you talk about that in your book, so we might leave that and let people explore that journey for themselves. Now, before I go, there's one other person, obviously, that's had a big influence in your journey, Rabbi Aden Steinsaltz.
Rabbi Steinsaltz lives in Jerusalem, and he's a genius. I mean that in every way. He's self-taught, he's self-read, and not just in Jewish religious things, because he also was born into a non-observant family, but into nature, into physics, into chemistry, into history, into culture, into art, right across. And he's got an amazing mind, and he's an intellectual, he's a teacher, and he's a writer. Mm. He's written over 60 books, and we became close, we became good friends. So half the book are articles by Rabbi Steinsaltz on these topics from the seven chapters which I've done, and the whole thing, I think you'll probably notice, actually synthesized. The whole thing flows beautifully together. Mm. And I hope people enjoy the beautiful art, because it's unusual to have this beautiful art in the book too.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because there's some wonderful pictures. Now, where did they come from?
There's a well-known Australian artist who can be Googled, Victor Meisner, and I met him, and I invited him if he wanted to do illustrations for the book. So he read the book, and he became very inspired, which is really nice. And the most beautiful paintings, very spiritual, as you can see, and he's given an explanation of them. And they just help people to, like you say, a picture's worth a thousand words. They just help people to see more than just the words.
Who have you written this book for?
Initially, I was writing because I just wanted to express these things and I wanted to share. And it would be my dream that if as many people as possible would read it, and if it can do something to try and help people, help society, help people to improve their lives, to find more meaning, and whatever money we make all goes to charities anyway. So it's really a win-everything situation. It has a possibility to help improve society, improve people's lives, and the spin-off is that the money will go to various charities to help unfortunate people.
Well, it's a wonderful book, and as I said before, there are some enormous topics covered, and in a really beautiful and clear way, Ron. Thank you so much for talking with me about your book today, and I wish you all the best with it.